Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Time check in our studios is 5 minutes past nine. A very good morning to you all, wherever you are listening to us, and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host in Bonn, Germany. Our main stories this Wednesday, July the 15th. Boko Haram strikes again after Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari brings in new military chiefs. Are the new appointees up to the task?
It's not enough to have a good command in order to yield some result in facing such an insurgency.
Rwanda's parliament votes in support of a motion which could remove presidential term limits and potentially allow President Kagame to run for a third term.
I'm very happy with it, and I appreciate this decision taken by the Senate, whereby they valued people's petitions and the people's request so that our president can be extended to the third term.
And left in the dark, Zambians grapple with power outages.
It affected a lot because I'm a hairdresser and work with electricity. So there's no electricity. I don't know how am I going to get paid.
Plus the fate of hundreds of residents of Kenya's Kibera slums that hangs in the balance. We'll find out why, so stay tuned.
Top story.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon on Tuesday condemned Boko Haram's twin suicide bombings in Cameroon. The suicide attack carried out by two women killed more than a dozen people on the border town of Fotokol. It was the first of suicide bombing attack in the Central African nation. Military sources say three Chadian soldiers were among the dead, several Cameroonian soldiers were injured and evacuated to the capital, Yaounde. Moki Kinzeka sent this report that begins with a message from Cameroon's President Paul Biya condemning the attacks.
Le président de la République, son excellence Paul Biya, condamne avec fermeté ces attentats.
The president of the Republic, Paul Biya, vehemently condemns Sunday's two suicide bombings. He extends his condolences to bereaved families and wishes a quick recovery to wounded and displaced people. The president has given firm instructions to the military to secure Cameroon's territorial integrity and the safety of its people. He has called for vigilance and expressed his determination more than ever before to fight terrorism and develop Cameroon as an emerging country.
This message from President Paul Biya aired on public radio this Tuesday called on the population to stay calm after Cameroon reported its first ever suicide bomb attack. Paul Biya revealed that Boko Haram killed 13 people in the double suicide bomb attack near Cameroon's military base in Fotokol on the border with Nigeria's Borno State, former stronghold of the militants. 10 civilians died besides one Chadian soldier and two suicide bombers. Four Chadian soldiers and three Cameroonian soldiers were wounded in the attack. A medical doctor confirmed the wounded were already at the military hospital in Yaounde, but asked not to be named, saying he was not authorized to speak.
Nous avons pratiquement quatre cas de fracture.
Four of them have serious fractures. We are carrying out screening, X-ray and scanning to confirm the magnitude of the crisis and then know how to manage it.
Cameroonians in the capital Yaounde, like 23-year-old university student Ngum Helen, say the attack has severely scared them.
What we usually see on TV happening in different countries is already happening in Cameroon. We are in danger. At any moment, all of us are just going to die with something. Secure the nations, the citizens, because no one is safe at this very point in time.
Last April, Cameroon announced that the Nigerian terrorist group was changing tactics and preaching Islamic State ideology, especially to the youths. The Central African nation started a mass education program for young people to reject such doctrine. Helen pleads with Cameroonian youths who are vulnerable to denounce suspects.
It's a very big pity that they are using the youth. It is because they are maybe jobless, they are vulnerable, that they are accepting. They should not accept to go destroy people. It's a very big pity.
Businessman Kuma Stanley says it is high time Cameroon intensifies security, not only on its borders, but also in the hinterlands.
Intensify the checkpoints. The fact that the government is checking only Muslims doesn't make the checking really efficient. I think the government should ask advice from other countries that are used to such situations, like Nigeria. I'm quite terrified.
Cameroon's Minister of Communication and Government spokesperson, Issa Chiruma Bakari, has called for vigilance and assured Cameroonians of the government's relentless commitment to protect its citizens.
In our country, the challenges are enormous. Cameroon is resolutely committed in the fight against terrorism. This is a requirement of solidarity. This is also and primarily a requirement of national security.
The last time Fotokol was under fire from the insurgents was in the month of February 2015, when scores of people were slaughtered and churches, mosques, and schools were burned down.
Moki Kinzeka reporting from Yaounde. It's not just Cameroon that is being targeted by Boko Haram. Nigeria's police say Boko Haram gunmen attacked four villages in the northeast, killing 43 people, according to witnesses. This comes after President Muhammadu Buhari appointed new military chiefs after sacking those who worked under former President Goodluck Jonathan. My colleague Crispin Mwakidewo spoke to William Ansavo, a senior researcher with the Institute for Security Studies in Dakar, to find out whether the changes will make a difference.
We are witnessing an administration that is slowly establishing itself, and this appointment could be interpreted as one of the illustrations of that. It's also an illustration of the fact that President Buhari ranked the fight against Boko Haram insurgency as one of its top priority.
But usually people say that you shouldn't change your commanders in the midst of a fight. Isn't this rather going to weaken the military if you're changing the top commanders when the fight is really at its peak?
The record of the Nigerian army against Boko Haram has not been very successful. And let me also remind that in June 2015 of this year, Amnesty International issued a report pointing the military command responsibility in several human rights violations. And I think two of the generals that were removed were pinpointed in that report. I think it's maybe also an answer to grave accusation against the military command.
In your own assessment, are the newly appointed security chiefs now worth their salt? Are they up to the task that is ahead of them?
It's not enough to have a good command in order to yield some result in such a challenge facing such an insurgency. It's not going to be enough. It's already a good thing to have a military with good credentials, but this the same thing that it will not be enough to have a former general like Buhari at the head of the state to prevail in such a fight. I think what is clear from now is that President Buhari's strategy to address the Boko Haram insurgency is still not clear. The only concrete decision that were made was to move the command center against the insurgency to Maiduguri, a town that itself is targeted, has been targeted several times over the past weeks. So this town is still striving to protect itself. And I don't know what difference it will make to have the command control in that town.
The presidential spokesman said that the Nigerian army was, by its own assessment, ill-equipped, it is poorly trained and lacks the commitment to fight. So what kind of reforms does the army require in order to win this conflict with Boko Haram?
100% security is still a challenge, even in Western countries. And we may not be surprised to, even with an army that is well-equipped, an army that is well-trained, we may not be surprised to witness again and again Boko Haram attacks and kind of suicide attacks. I think they will need to improve the intelligence. They will also need to reduce the manpower of the Boko Haram groups in this northern part of the of Nigeria, and these areas are experiencing some socioeconomic problems, and they will need to address these issues to discourage young people to join the ranks of Boko Haram.
Security expert on Nigeria and senior researcher at the Institute for Security Studies, William Ansavo, in Dakar.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Now, Rwandan lawmakers have voted to back a motion that seeks to remove presidential term limits. If successful, the move could see President Paul Kagame rule beyond two terms should he choose to run again in 2017. A parliamentary committee will now consider the proposal before it is subjected to a national referendum. Kagame is credited with turning around Rwanda's economy after the 1994 genocide, but critics accuse him of stifling the opposition. From Kigali, Flora Kaitesi reports.
The 14th of July will go down in Rwanda's history. It is the first time the upper and lower houses of parliament convene to examine a petition signed by over 3.7 million Rwandans. That is well over half of the voting population, pushing for constitutional amendment to eliminate a presidential term limit beyond two terms. Any change must, however, be approved by the rest of the population through a national referendum. And if Rwandans give the bill the green light, President Paul Kagame can run for a third term in office. These Kigali residents have been following the debates in parliament with keen interest.
I'm very happy with it, and I appreciate this decision taken by the Senate, whereby they valued people's petitions and the people's request so that our president can be extended to the third term, basing on what he achieved for us.
As women, we have come from very far and now we have a voice. We are very excited and our desire is that Article 101 is amended so that we have the opportunity to vote for our president again.
Article 101 of Rwanda's constitution limits presidential terms to two. The petition to change this article has been supported by lawmakers from both the lower and upper houses. Veteran politician from the ruling party Rwanda Patriotic Front, Tito Rutaremara, thinks the process to amend Article 101 will be very cumbersome.
There is much more. I am addressing the citizens so that they understand that this is an ongoing process. The discussion about the amendment of Article 101 will continue. How it will be removed, what comes after that. We need to discuss all of this extensively with the citizens.
The Speaker of Parliament from the opposition Liberal Party, Donatil Mukabalisa, must be involved in the entire decision-making process.
Members of Parliament should conduct extensive public consultations so that we speak directly to the citizens, so that those who did not get the opportunity to be here can also be accorded their right to express their opinion, whether on Article 101 or on other articles that may be amended.
So far, some opposition parties have supported the constitutional amendment, including the largest group, the Social Democratic Party. The Green Party has opposed the amendment and it is challenging it in court.
Flora Katesi reporting from Kigali. And you are listening to Africa Link program straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host, and I'll be back right after this.
Behind the headlines.
Kenya's Kibera slum is Africa's largest and the world's third biggest. For long, Kenya's leadership has sought to change that. With the help of several donor organizations, Kenya launched a housing project to relocate slum dwellers. But many Kibera residents say they cannot afford to raise the subsidized deposit amount needed to move into these modern flats. Alfred Kitty was in Kibera and sent us this report.
That is the sound of sewage water gushing through a trench in the middle of blocks of flats. The slum upgrading project in Kibera slums. 60-year-old Mama Sabeti Ombaso is worried that she won't be able to raise $1,300 required by the government to get a low-cost mortgage.
We are poor. The poor will not get these houses. Where will I go?
But Mama Sabeti is not alone in the dilemma. About 300 other families in the Soweto village of Kibera slum might miss the opportunity to get into the new houses, which are a second phase of the slum upgrading program established over 10 years ago. The residents claim that wealthy people have come to take over ownership of the houses, taking advantage of their inability to raise the 10% required by their authorities.
I could borrow salt from my neighbor. If I lack 10 shillings, I could easily get it from my neighbor too. Now, where shall I get assistance?
The idea was brilliant on the onset, but according to David Ngige, chairman of the decanting site community, they are not involved in the decision-making process as far as their relocation is concerned.
There is no enough consultation between the stakeholders, the community involved, and the government. The government is doing things on its own without consulting the community. That's our main concern.
According to poor tenants who are moved on the pilot phase, the project is a failure. But Hannah Wanjiru, a former landlord in the then Soweto village, has a different story.
I was a landlord, and when we start the slum upgrading, I demolish my house, and I come here in slum upgrading.
Hannah says her life has changed, and those opposed to the mortgage plan are not appreciative to the government's effort. Kibera, which is characterized by tin-roofed mud-walled shanties, is now getting a new look. Just next to a section of the slum, popularly known as Soweto Village, are modern residential flats where none other than 600 families formerly from the slum are residing in these flats, thanks to the government of Kenya and UN Habitat. Founded more than 100 years ago, Kibera Slum in Nairobi, Kenya, the largest urban slum in Africa, is said to be home to around a fifth of Nairobi's population, meaning that there could be about 1 million residents in the slum. Poor sanitation, heaps of garbage, and blocked drainage systems are a common sight in Kibera slums. Lack of toilets in the slum has attracted a number of non-governmental organizations and community-based organizations to venture into the business of providing sanitation solutions to Kibera residents. There are over 600 community-based organizations operating in Kibera slums, all with one goal: improving the lives of Kibera community. Across the valley, between the tin-roofed mud houses, is a successful project that is transforming the lifestyle of Kibera residents. The Human Needs Project is an example. The problem of poor sanitation and lack of clean water has been permanently solved in a section of the slum. The Kibera Town Center is a program of the Human Needs Project, an NGO offering sanitation solutions. That is a sanctioned pump drawing water from a borehole into three 5,000-liter tanks at a new community project in Kibera, with a modern cyber cafe with high-speed internet connection at the heart of Kibera slums. To get services like internet, one had to walk a long way or sometimes travel to the city center to access a cyber cafe. But since the Kibera Town Center was established about a year ago, students like Stephen Ocheng Omolo need not travel that far again.
The Human Needs Project is a very good project, particularly in my level, because I'm a student and most public health is a matter of research. So most of the times when I come here, I usually do research. If you come to this place, you get free Wi-Fi, and that helps you, like the cost that you could have incurred another place, at least it's, let me say, it's cut.
Kibera Town Center is now an attraction not only for residents but foreigners who come as tourists under the slum tourism banner to come and see real poverty, but on the contrary, find themselves in a different world. Residents enjoying high-end services just like any other humans in the other part of the world.
That report was compiled by Alfred Kitty in Nairobi's Kibera slum. Still on household problems, Zambia faces a serious energy crisis due to low water levels. This has resulted into countrywide power cuts that last up to 10 hours daily. Economic analysts have warned that the current blackouts could have long-lasting negative impact on the country's ailing economy. Kathy Sikombi sent this report.
This is Lusaka's central business district on a busy afternoon as traders go about their daily activities. There are occasional smiles here and there as I walk by. But not all is rosy, as power outages have increased in the past 2 weeks, largely due to low water levels. Zambia relies on hydropower to generate most of its electricity. However, in the past few years, the water level in major rivers has gone down drastically, thus affecting power generation. Power outages normally take as long as 8 hours at a time for more than 2 times daily. Esnat Zulu Ziwau is a hairdresser at Latisana Hair Salon in the Central Business District and says business is not good.
It affected a lot because I'm a hairdresser and work with electricity. So there's no electricity. I don't know how am I going to get paid because we work with power. So it affected a lot.
The situation is the same in Lusaka's Kalundu area. Gladys Chuka, who runs a butchery, says she has been counting huge losses due to the power rationing. Catherine Walia, who runs a restaurant in Lusaka's North Mid area, also agrees. She used to make an equivalent of at least 50 euros daily, but these days that is hard to come by.
Load shedding has affected us in terms of business, the way we are doing. Everything affected because of the load shedding. We had food gone bad at some time whereby don't have power, 06 until maybe 22 hours, and then we have fresh meat. We are supposed to have power every day, every time, so that we don't have food bad.
Boniface Chulu, an economist, says he's worried by what's happening. He says if left unchecked, the power outages could have far-reaching negative implications on the country's already struggling economy.
So we have seen weeks of productivity now reduced to just 1 day, if you will, of productivity in a given week owing to the load shedding. So it's been a big problem, and we hope that it's something that can be addressed sooner rather than later, because obviously when you have people not being productive, it has an overall impact, a negative one for that matter, on the general well-being of the economy.
Zambia's government has acknowledged the problem and says it had been forced to take those drastic measures in order to save the little water that's been left. Chishimba Kambwili is the government spokesperson.
The maximum power deficit the country faces is estimated to be at about 560 megawatts. In the interim, this deficit will be sourced from both power inputs and load shedding. ZESCO Limited has embarked on a countrywide power rationing mechanism in order to prevent the limited water available for power generation until the 2015-2016 rain season.
For now, Zambians such as Esnat and Gladys have to cope with the interim measures being put in place by authorities. Others have been forced to turn to charcoal, which endangers the environment. Energy experts have called on the government to explore alternative sources of energy, such as thermal and solar, as part of solving the energy crisis.
Kathy Sikombi reporting from Lusaka.
Opinion.
In our opinion segment this week, let's take another look at two of our main stories for the opinion. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has appointed new military heads to tackle Boko Haram after sacking those who worked under Goodluck Jonathan. The question is, does President Buhari have a plan or is he acting out of frustration? And in Rwanda, lawmakers have backed a motion that could potentially end presidential term limits and pave the way for President Paul Kagame should he choose to run for a third term in 2017. Now, is the support for scrapping presidential term limits good or bad for Rwanda? Send us your thoughts by email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a text message to country code 49160957595510, or a letter to Africa Link DW53110 Bonn, Germany, and read some of your comments right here. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow at the same time. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, wishing you a splendid day ahead.